So, good evening, everybody. I sort of became aware that for several months now, I've been focusing on the relationship between our preferences, our feelings, our thoughts, our desires, our perceived needs, the sort of active part of our psyche that basically can be labeled our emotions, our emotional life, our life of desire, and its relationship to the Dharma. And I don't think I was aware that I had an intention to do that, but I discovered it by doing it. And it has caused me to say some things that are, I think, admittedly quite challenging to our ordinary way of living. I was aware of this last week especially, during study group and during a Dharma talk, when I said, we are not our feelings. We're not our thoughts. This could be a very confusing statement in a culture where both, where the ego is basically reified and where every aspect of our personal lives is glorified, and where we're told that what you feel is primary, what you think is primary. And as I've said many times, where basically our perception is labeled truth, as in, you know, my truth. And I think I've spoken fairly strongly about what I perceive as the basic delusion and therefore the suffering causing of such an idea. And I do think that that if we don't look further into those ideas, we may fall even further into the kind of suffering that comes from that kind of delusion. When I spoke about no preference, I also was talking about our feelings, and I was talking about a kind of ground where we don't necessarily fortify that part of our lives. And so in thinking about that, I realized that it might sound like I'm saying that in Zen practice, our emotions are actually not so good, or our personal thoughts or desires are not so good. Maybe we shouldn't have them. Well, that would be a misleading idea, because it isn't what I have been trying to communicate over this time. When I was thinking about it this afternoon a little bit, the idea came to me that if our, let's say our feelings, for example, are like a ball, a rubber ball, kind of rolls around, can go in any direction. It's not so stable, really, once it's set in motion. I mean, it tends to be stable in the direction that you move it. And but if we think that our authentic self, which is what I was talking about last week, is really this ball, and then we have a kind of feelings, it's like trying to balance a ball on top of a ball. And that's a very unstable situation. You can't really quite do it. I don't know if any of you have tried to balance one ball on top of another, but I have. And it's not easy. It's pretty hard to do. And when I looked into that image this afternoon, I thought, well, been trying to say something else, really. I've been trying to say that there is a ground that ball can roll on, that it can play on. But the ground is not the ball. And the ground is not another ball. The ground is vast, and it's stable, and it's steady, and it's able to withstand any movement or activity of that ball that happens to come into the life of that ball, no matter what sets it in motion. Sometimes love might set that ball in motion, and we feel, you know, all of those feelings, and love just rolls and rolls and rolls. And sometimes rejection might set that ball in motion, and that rolls and rolls and rolls until eventually it stops. I think we're all old enough to know that no matter how much we may want to feel something or not want to feel something, eventually it sort of comes to a quieter time. You know, we can say it stops, or maybe goes underground a little bit. But this ground, which I'm calling authentic being, and which in Zen is called a true self or original self, this ground is vast, and this ground is stable, and this ground is not conditioned by the movement of the ball. At some point in practice, I think we have to decide whether we really think that's true or not. Whether we really believe that that is the case. That our nature is so strong, so all-pervasive, so vast, that in fact it is capable of withstanding the activity of that ball. That it is capable, in other words, of experiencing a human life and yet remaining absolutely reliable. If we practice without even entertaining the idea of having a conviction in that, our practice is going to be very difficult. Because it means that at any moment the rug might be pulled out from under us. And so what I've been trying to say all along, and I, you know, honestly, I feel like I'm saying it okay, but I don't really know. Take the risk. Take the risk of making a commitment to that ground. Take the risk of letting go of the grasping after all of the thoughts and feelings that we have that bolster the ego, basically. The ego self. And trust that there is a ground beneath that ground. And test it. Try it out. Be willing to let go of the grasping that we human beings are so good at. And surrender to the fact that your life will blow you all over the place, and still you will be okay. In Zen, when we talk about the great matter of life and death, we're really talking about discovering what that ground is. That's what we're really talking about. When I meet people, or when I talk with any of you, either in our conversations or in Tokusan or even on the phone, And I hear that things are not going so well. More, you know, when I look at in my own home, I see my wife wondering if she'll ever really walk again, because she's not able to walk now, so maybe she won't walk again. It seems possible to her. All I really want to say is there is a ground. And walking or not walking, there is still a ground. Or feeling okay or not feeling okay, there is still a ground. Or being devastated by loss, there is still a ground. And no matter what the nature of our suffering is, there is still a ground. And we should acquaint ourselves with that ground. If we have to do it at first just as a kind of intellectual idea, that's okay. We can do it that way. If when you sit zazen and you notice your mind doing all the, you know, rolling around that the mind does, notice also that you're still just fine. You have not been actually shaken off of your ground. Even if you feel shaken off of your ground, you still have not been shaken off of your ground. When your mind hurts so much that you just think you cannot go on, and most people have reached a point like that at some point in their lives, notice that your ground is still there. In other words, test it. I don't know a better way at this moment of trying to encourage you to realize that all of us can live wonderful, happy lives right in the midst of whatever personal hell we may be experiencing. Wonderful, happy lives. Useful lives. Lives that inspire other people. Lives that make us want to keep living. So that we may help other people. And then to ask you to acquaint yourself deeply with this ground. One of the great discoveries of the Buddha was this ground. And that it did not belong to just one person, but that it was the ground of reality itself. Now, we practice in this tradition, and I think we should do our best to really listen to our teacher, to Shakyamuni, who was able to realize, and by realizing, show us that it can be realized, that this ground, this ground of everythingness is our life itself. It's not separate from us. And so I thought today I'd like to talk about a ball rolling across an empty ground, and hope that I could clarify that. Possibly the mistaken views I may have engendered by my poor speech. Again, I don't know if I did, but just in case, thought I'd better say it.